The state legislature is back in action. 13 weeks to get through a lot of issues in what's a short season, short session, I should say. Joining me to talk about that is Kevin Featherly of Minnesota Lawyer at minlawyer.com. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, first up, right out of the chute today, the fight over Michelle Fischbach being lieutenant governor and a senator at the same time. Her vote is the margin for the GOP majority in the Senate and the subject of a lawsuit that I want you to tell us about. But I first want to hear from Senator Ron Latz, a Democrat. He brought that whole thing up as Fischbach presided over the Senate today in her role as president. I think I've got that. Yeah, right here.
My name is Lee.
Nope. Let's try this again.
I'd like to rise to point out that we believe that the presiding person presiding over this body is the Lieutenant Governor of the state of Minnesota, in conflict with our Constitution. Article 5, Section 5 of the Constitution provides that the last elected presiding officer of the Senate shall become Lieutenant Governor in case a vacancy occurs in that office. And Article 3, Section 1 of the Constitution provides that no person or persons belonging to or constituting one of these departments shall exercise any of the powers properly belonging to either of the others, except in the instances expressly provided in this Constitution. Lieutenant Governor Fischbach, I do not believe that there are any such exercises expressly provided in this Constitution. And I rise in the nature of a protest or dissent, although this is not an act or resolution that provides for a formal protest and dissent. We want the record to reflect my objection to Lieutenant Governor Fischbach presiding over the Senate.
So noted.
That was a very lawyerly speech, but that is a very contentious point right now. Kevin, tell us about what's going on with that whole fight.
Well, it was also a very direct confrontation because he was speaking and looking directly into the eyes of Michelle Fischbach. And notably, too, the person closest to Senator Latz was the minority leader, Senator Bach, who told me last week that it is possible that if another lawsuit is filed, he might be the one to file it. There is no lawsuit right now. That's important to note. The lawsuit that was in play is gone. A constituent did sue Michelle Fischbach, trying to get a temporary injunction to have her removed from her seat, at least while the rest of the suit played out. The rest of the suit also was to get her out of the Senate. But effectively, she won because the judge found she had no standing. But the judge did not rule on the issue of whether or not she can have two jobs. That remains an open question. Where we're at now is, I think, poised for the next lawsuit.
Exactly, because the judge said that it was not ripe, is what I think he said. And the fact that the Senate hadn't convened, and in fact that Fischbach had not been on a vote that, you know, her vote actually was the margin of difference. I got the feeling reading that lawsuit, that is one of the things that could trigger this. And I think Senator Bach has himself said that.
Well, I think the judge said that directly in the ruling. He said that if a Marr versus Stearns-like scenario, which I'll explain if you want me to, were to play out, in other words, if there is a vote that produces a law that is approved by a one-vote margin in the Senate, and Michelle Fischbach is the deciding vote, that law might be challenged. If a law such as that were challenged, Judge Guthman said that the courts would accept that case because that would be a ripe constitutional issue. And I think that was pretty instructive for the Senate. I asked Senator Bach about that, and he said that's exactly how he read it as well. So it does appear that at this point we're just waiting for her to cast a vote, and if she casts a vote that is the deciding vote, that could result in a challenged law. And I've kind of got this fantasy scenario that I'm played out in my mind that one thing that happened recently, which is connected to this, is that it must have been 2 weeks ago at a forum, Melissa Hortman, the House Minority Leader, stunned the Speaker and the assistant majority leader in the Senate, who was there, Senator Benson, by saying that they might not offer any DFL votes on the legislative budget bill, the one that was vetoed last year, unless the Republicans agree to tie employee contracts in the Republicans rejected the employee contracts last fall. So they're saying that we might not give you any votes on that bill unless, and on the the vetoed funding bill for the legislature, unless you approve that. Well, the reason that is intriguing to me in this scenario is because that could be the bill that is decided by one vote, if indeed the Democrats are able to vote as a block against that funding bill. Then the funding bill might be the bill that comes forward that is decided by one vote and winds up back in court. So we could have a complete serpent eating its tail scenario playing out.
Yeah, I want to come back to talk about those contracts in just a second, but let's finish playing out the constitutional geekdom here, because that's what this really is. Everybody who's a constitutional lawyer or a constitutional aficionado is looking at this and saying this is it's really uncharted territory in the last several decades that this has happened. And right. Especially in the current charged atmosphere that we have in the legislature, I mean, could Senator Fischbach, I mean, if there's a vote to remove her, would she preside over that? I have no idea how this might play out. Is there a possibility that anything like that might happen in the Senate, or would
well,
she just
unlikely
resign?
Well, unlikely, because that, and I was corrected on that in a very public and humiliating way. That's what I was talking about offline. It would take a two-thirds vote to expel, so there's no way that
right.
could come down to a one-vote margin. So that could,
okay.
That's not going to happen. That's not the scenario that would play out. So they're not going to vote to expel. That's almost certain. But that is why we are almost certainly looking at a lawsuit. And, you know, the Constitution does pretty convincingly say in several different ways that an elected official can't hold two offices. A legislator can't hold two offices other than the role of postmaster and notary public. Can't do anything else at the same time. And that, you know, the people I've talked to, including Jack Davies, one of the people who rewrote the Constitution, are convinced that means she can't have both these jobs. She's not relying on the Constitution for her argument. She's relying on the aforementioned Marv versus Stearns, an ancient 1898 Supreme Court case that says she can't have both jobs. But that was well before all these constitutional amendments came forward.
Wow. It's going to be interesting to watch that and the timing on that. We only have 13 weeks in session. The real question is whether that is going to work its way through the courts in that amount of time. My guess is probably not, but we'll have to wait and see on that. Let's go back to the state employee contracts, because this is an issue where a lot of state employees were denied a raise because of what I take as a small group of Republicans decided in a committee that they weren't going to forward this on. And it's usually kind of an automatic thing after this is negotiated. So where is that sitting right now?
Well, the Subcommittee on Employee Relations back, I think it was in October, voted 6-4 against putting forward the contracts. And that's kind of unusual from what I understand. Now, bear in mind, I've been covering the legislature full-time for a little more than a year, so that's my full history. But what I'm told is that generally that committee would either not act or they would approve the contracts and things would just go move forward. But in this case, they voted 6-4 to reject the contracts. And one thing that Senator Benson has said a number of times, she's on that committee and voted against the contracts, is that Myron Franz at MMB didn't provide the correct data until February 1st, after months of delay. What that's all about, I honestly don't really understand. But the bottom line is that they rejected these contracts. So that's what Hortman was saying. If we're going to vote to approve the budget that the governor vetoed, a budget that effectively gives legislators a $15,000 pay raise, then they feel it would be unjust not to also hitch that pay raise to approval of the employee contracts, which, as I recall, is a little over 2% per year over 2 years. Whether there are tails and if it's ongoing, that's a question that I'd have to study. But I know it's 2% per year with some maneuvering to make things a little easier on the healthcare front for the employer side.
That funding also includes, I think, funding in general for the legislature, though, too, right now. That includes all the employees, and that
right.
At some point
yeah,
runs out
here. Yeah, the vetoed bill was all of the legislature's money. I mean, the money that they spend to keep themselves in business and their staff, you know, all of those people. And that's what Governor Dayton vetoed in sort of revenge for the poison pill provision that was inserted. And, you know, it's all madness.
Speaking of things coming back from last session, we have another bill that might come back, you were telling me. This is the protest freeway bill. If people remember, this is was brought up famously after Black Lives Matters folks and others shut down one of the freeways here in the Twin Cities as a protest movement. And there was a move by a couple of Republicans who said we need to, you know, prevent this by criminalizing this even more so. That didn't go anywhere, but you're hearing rumors that it's going to come back?
Well, let me put a little caveat there. It did go somewhere. It went all the way to conference committee. It was included, passed. It had made it into the very final negotiations in conference committee where they decide what is actually going to come out and pass in the final appropriations bill. It was at that time in the public safety judiciary appropriations omnibus. It got traded away when the Republicans wanted to keep the anti-immigrant provisions in the Real ID bill. So Democrats wouldn't agree to keep both, so Republicans traded away the protest bill. And Nick Zeroas has told me several times over the last couple of months that he's had the assurances of the Speaker, Dowd, that that bill would be reintroduced this year. I asked the Speaker about that, and he said, yes, there is likely to be a protest bill, but whether it's going to be Zeroas's bill or whether it's going to be Loehmer's very similar bill or if it's going to be some other iteration is not known at this point. But he's confident that that bill will have new life in the coming session.
Remind me, has Governor Dayton issued a veto threat on something like that, or he's been very quiet on it? I don't recall. Do you?
Well, he's kind of, as I recall, you're asking me to rewind the tapes about a year and a half, but
I recall.
He's sort of suggested that he could be amenable to it because he, you know, that is a public safety hazard to, you know, block freeways. And the what it does is increase the penalty from, as I recall, a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor. It's not a felony, although there was discussion at one stage of making it a felony. But it would be a gross misdemeanor, so that, you know, a relatively minor crime, but still more than it has been.
And let's move on to a couple new things, because this one popped up just last week. Carla Nelson, who is running for U.S. Senate, coincidentally, just came out with a bill that she wants to make so she can make sure that, I guess the example she gave was Republicans holding, having guests at universities or allowed to have them in places they want to have them because then, you know, right now they're being told they can't because there's too many security concerns. I mean, I'm really kind of trying to summarize here, but
yeah,
I can't.
Yeah, it had to do with
what,
a speaker named Ben Shapiro, who's a conservative blogger. Quite honestly, I know very little about, but I do know that he's something of a flamethrower. And as has happened at campuses around the country in recent years, there was protest. There was a threat of who knows what, but enough of a threat that administration officials apparently said, "Well, we can't give you any venue on the main campus." They offered only a 400-seat venue on the St. Paul campus about 4 miles away, which the conservative students accepted under some protest. But that is at least the spark for this particular bill that Carla Nelson is pushing. And what it would do is it would create several things it would do, but it would create a cause of action which would allow a student who's found to have had their free speech rights infringed upon on campus to get an injunctive relief, which means make the university stop whatever it's doing, and also award reasonable court costs. So that's something of a relatively big club. But it also wants to post policies affirming free speech principles and require publication of colleges' free speech policies in a form that's readily available to students. It sounds like it's not that big a deal, but you know, we've seen these kinds of things pop up, and, you know, it's kind of hard to know what they mean by the phrase that they're using, campus neutrality. They want campuses essentially to be neutral on these political matters. Well, that's splitting the left in some ways, because you get people like Bill Maher and even the ACLU saying, wait a minute, we can't have people ushered out because they don't say the right things or what they're speaking about is unpopular. Colleges are supposed to be these sort of, you know, cauldrons of thought and challenge to students. And so it's controversial. It's something that it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Whether, you know, there's actually a couple of bills very, very similar that are moving forward at the same time, but Carla Nelson had a public launch of her bill a couple days ago, about 10 days ago.
Yeah, and I think she had some students with her. I think they were talking about an incident where they felt their free speech rights were infringed against when they put up a poster on the Washington Avenue Bridge that said "Build the Wall," and somebody painted spray painted white supremacy over it. As a real question of what is hate speech and what is suggestive of hate speech, and that's kind of how our president got elected. He was on the hairy edge of saying some of those things, just enough innuendo that everybody understood who, you know, got the dog whistle, and everybody who is against something like that, who understands the dog whistle, really doesn't want that out there. So, you're right. It's a very tough issue, and it's gonna be interesting how the debate goes on this.
And one of the things that happened at that forum that Forum Communications had, where the four legislative leaders and Governor Dayton were all present, getting reporters firing questions at them, they were asked about that, and Melissa Hortman basically said that she supports the idea of, you know, not squelching free speech, and that's kind of interesting because she actually on January 23rd protested an appearance by Rahil Raza, an Islamic woman who calls herself a feminist Muslim, but who the Southern Poverty Law Center says belongs to a hate group, and she actually asked Roz Peterson, a representative, to rescind that invitation.
So I remember that.
There's some possibility that this kind of thing is actually spreading into the Capitol. That appearance did go forward, but, you know, we're starting to see some of the same shadings of the same kind of thing happening at the Capitol.
Yeah. So that I think was one of the questions brought up, if this was going to apply at the Capitol or not. And I think I don't know if we got a straight answer on that, but
I get the sense this is all about campuses, you know, at this point. There was a student there, Maddie Dibble, who had a really interesting point. You know, she said that she thinks that in some way universities are to blame for the scenario because, as you say, they allow these allowed vandalism of a poster on a bridge, effectively. But she says that across the country, you've seen the rise of what are called healing spaces, and you know we've seen some of those popped up after the election of Donald Trump and gave students a place to go to sort of commiserate over the fact that this guy had been elected president. And Maddie Dibble, who's an editor of a conservative publication, the Minnesota Republic, said that that sends a message that contrarian conservative statements are actually violent. And her quote was, "I believe that mindset led students today to believe that they need to shut down these events. They need to silence the event altogether because it's, quote, hateful." It's a very interesting perspective.
We're speaking with Kevin Featherly, who is with Minnesota Lawyer. He covers the state capitol. The legislature just got back today and is getting everything going. I think the House is taking tomorrow off for sexual harassment training, is what I've heard. One other issue real quickly here before we run. President Trump today announced that he was moving forward with getting some sort of ban on bump stocks. These are the things that turn guns into automatic weapons or machine guns. And there is a move afoot, and I don't know if it's still going to be there, but to do something similar here in Minnesota, correct?
Yeah, there's a bill. There were a bunch of pre-session bills that the House introduced. The Senate doesn't typically do that before the session, but the House had a bunch of them. And one of them was a bill by Representative Jack Considine, who's from Mankato. He's a Democrat. And it's got interesting language. It would clarify that a, quote, slide fire stock, not bump stock, but a slide fire stock for a semi-automatic firearm is a, quote, trigger activator. So that really just changes the definitions in statute. But what's interesting about that is he's not using the phrase bump stock. He's using the phrase slide fire stock. And what's interesting about that is that Slide Fire is actually a company, a manufacturer that makes bump stock. So he's, in this bill at least, he's using the company's name. And I don't know if that's why he's doing that, but it seems a pretty in-your-face move if it's intentional.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a broader ban or not, but it's interesting the language on that. It'd be interesting to see how that gets enforced if it gets into law. That could be an interesting distinction. Hey, Kevin,
we've
got to run
along.
Well,
what Trump is doing apparently is changing regulations, and that might very well supersede anything that the legislature is doing because that would be a national regulation. So I'm not sure that the Considine measure would be needed at that point, but who knows?
Yeah. Kevin, we have to run along, but I appreciate you checking in with us here. There's so much happening at the legislature this year. I'm sure we're going to be talking again before we get through 13 weeks, because there's a lot that happens in 13 weeks. Kevin Featherly can be found over at minnlawyer.com. Kevin, thanks for your help today.
Thank you.